is about. There's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
All right, here we go. Welcome to a Wednesday night. It is Nicole Sandler here with you on Air America Radio. And, well, we've got an amazing show for you tonight. And I'm really excited about this first hour. Before I bring on our first guest, let me back up a little bit and say that I feel a little bit out of my league here. Now, Ray McGovern has been on the show with me before. And let me tell you a little bit about him. I first learned of Ray McGovern about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, I guess. And Ray is a former CIA agent. He worked in the CIA for 27 years, serving under 9 different CIA directors in all 4 of the CIA's main areas, including operations. He is now the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I love the name of that group. And he also works with Tell the Word, which is the publishing arm of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. As I said, I first learned of Ray McGovern about 3.5 years ago when I saw a video of his standing up at a speech, I believe in Atlanta. It happened in May of 2006. And he confronted Donald Rumsfeld about his lies. And I'm just going to play for you a tiny clip of it, because I know you probably heard this too, because this video got a lot of play back then.
I'm Ray McGovern, a 27-year veteran of the Central Intelligence Agency and co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I would like to compliment you on your observation that lies are fundamentally destructive of the trust that government needs to govern.
Again, he stood up at a speech Donald Rumsfeld was giving and made this statement and asked a few questions.
A colleague of mine, Paul Pillar, who is the top agency analyst on the Middle East and on counterterrorism, accused you and your colleagues of an organized campaign of manipulation, quote, I suppose by some definition,
could you get to your question,
that be
please?
Called a lie. Atlanta, September 27, 2002, Donald Rumsfeld said, and I quote, there is bulletproof evidence of links between al-Qaeda and the government of President Saddam Hussein. Was that a lie, Mr. Rumsfeld, or was that manufactured somewhere else? Because all of my CIA colleagues disputed that, and so did the 9/11 Commission. And so I would like to ask you to be upfront with the American people. Why did you lie to get us into a war that was not necessary and that has caused these kinds of casualties? Why?
And so, yes, that was the beginning. That was when I first learned of Ray McGovern, and I've been a fan and follower of his ever since. And I've had the opportunity to speak with him on my program before. Now, with the events of the last few weeks, I thought, who can I talk to about the CIA and who I know is going to really speak candidly? And sure enough, I thought of Ray McGovern, and I did a search, and I found some articles that he's written of late, including one that he wrote today. You can find it up at commondreams.org, and it's entitled Counterterrorism in Shambles, Why? And sure enough, it was as stunning and shocking as I thought it would be. I contacted Ray. I asked him to come on the show tonight, and he agreed to do so. And he also sent me links to a few of his other pieces written in the recent weeks. One of them, Are Presidents Afraid of the CIA? And written on December 29th, and one the week before, called Break the CIA in Two. And we're going to talk about all those things with Ray McGovern, who joins me live this hour here on Air America Radio. Mr. McGovern, thank you so much for staying up late and joining us tonight on Air America.
Very glad to be with you, Nicole.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I'm not even sure where to start. When I first opened the show, I said I feel a little, out of my league here because this is such a complicated issue. I'm pretty opinionated, but I'll be the first to admit that I don't know everything. And then when we're talking about the CIA, I think there are very few who know everything. So I think what I want to do after reading all these pieces that you sent me today, my head is just spinning. Maybe we should start with a little bit of history and talk about how the CIA came about, because you did write quite a bit about Harry Truman and why the CIA was established back in 1947. Can you just fill us in with a little bit of a history lesson on that?
Sure. It's necessary background, and I'm glad that you began with that, Nicole. The CIA was set up right after World War II. Largely because there was the need for a central place where all information on a given country or issue would come into one inbox. And the younger of your audience will not really realize we had wooden inboxes in those days.
Right.
And into my inbox, for example, came everything and anything on the subject of Soviet foreign policy towards China, towards Southeast Asia, toward the international communist movement. Now, this is in the 60s. The idea was that one person should be, gosh, Nicole, I'm in Washington, and this word is banned from public discourse, but I guess it's safe here. I would be accountable.
Mm.
I would be responsible for looking through all that data, whether it was media, whether it was intercepted messages, satellite photography, embassy, reports from our own spies. I would be responsible and accountable for putting all that together. And if there was a story there, and once a month there was always a story on this, and if I wrote it well enough, it would be on the president's desk the following morning. Now, I could do that without fear or favor. I didn't have to worry about what the State Department was saying on that. I didn't have to worry about the Pentagon, because they always had the Soviets 10 feet tall, and we were saying, well, they're probably 5'8" and shrinking, So we could give it to the president straight. That's what he wanted. Truman wanted to be able to go out to CIA and say, look, Mr. Director, I want to know what you and those two universities were, the specialists you have out there in the woods of Virginia, I want to know what you really think about this, okay? Now, put yourself in the position of a president. Wouldn't you really like to have a place like that to go to?
Yes.
Yeah. So some place where you would have no doubt but that the director is telling you what they really think and not what they think you want to know. Of course.
Well, that should be why you're there. So
yeah.
that was the reason behind the Central Intelligence Agency, to gather information and present it to the president. So he had an unedited, just straight facts information on his desk every day.
Right. And the capability to do that to the best humanly possible sprang from access to all information. Okay. Pearl Harbor was fresh in Harry Truman's mind. And he knew better than anyone that there were little bits and snippets of information with the code breakers, with the Army Air Force, with the embassy in Tokyo, the FBI in Washington, the Navy in Honolulu. But nobody was in a central place to put it all together with access to all this information. So that's what attracted me when John Kennedy said, think of what you might be able to do for your country. That's what attracted me and so many of my generation to come down to Washington. I had majored in Russian studies, so it was sort of a natural for me. It was just a really attractive notion to have access to all this information and be able to tell the story without fear or favor. And Nicole, for almost 27 years, I was able to do precisely that. Now, the other part of the story is this. I'll try to be briefer here.
That's okay. We have the whole hour, so we can go in depth here.
Okay. Well, after the war, when it was decided to set up this agency and Truman had the legislation drafted, stressing the purposes that I just mentioned, came home the incredibly gifted, intelligent, imaginative, courageous, actually, Office of Strategic Services spies. These were the people that jumped in behind enemy lines. These are the people that brought Ho Chi Minh, incidentally, into Hanoi when he threw out the Japanese with our help. These were the people who had done miracles, both in the European theater and the Far East. And they came back 46, 47, and they said, well, thanks for all the applause. Do you still need us?
Mm.
And the question answered itself. With the Russians having taken over Eastern Europe, the KGB, the Soviet secret police, roaming throughout the world, doing all kinds of covert actions, the Italian communists, people feared, were about to take power in Rome, mostly because the Soviets were funding them. And so the question answered itself, and they said, oh, sure, we need this capability. And then some idiot, and that's the only name I can apply to this kind of person, some idiot said, well, hey, we're creating a CIA. That's a secret place. And these people will be doing secret things, these covert action people. So let's put this capability in with the analysts. A structural fault that we've never been able to overcome.
So that is the one piece the other piece that you wrote, that break the CIA in two, you wrote just a few weeks ago, when you're saying that the covert activities and the analysis should never be in the same, under the same heading. They need to be separate.
That's exactly right. Now, just to give your listeners an example, here's Bill Casey running a war in Nicaragua. He's going to go to the Congress or the American people or to even the president and be asked, well, how's the war going? You know, what's the medium long-term effect of this? He's going to be able to give an objective answer. Give me a break. Neither are any of his analysts, because no one will give any credibility to what they say about Nicaragua when the boss, Casey in this case, is running a war.
It's a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
Well, basically, Ray McGovern is with us. He is a 27-year CIA worker. I mean, you served in different capacities at the CIA, and he now really writes about it and talks about it. And he's a co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. I love that. We need to take a break here. We'll come back and then take it up to where we are today, and see how this agency that got off to a good start with good intentions, for a good purpose, has sort of morphed into something way too powerful. I mean, we talk about the banks being too big to fail. Well, the CIA seems to be controlling the country these days. And we'll talk about the powers in this agency and who really is running the country, and about all the failures we've had lately as well. Ray McGovern is with us here on Air America Radio. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
We are back with Ray McGovern, who is a former CIA agent analyst who has a great piece on commondreams.org today, Counterterrorism in Shambles, Why? And Ray, you answer a lot of questions there that I hope we can get to in this hour. And if people, listeners, want to chime in as well and have any questions, they are more than welcome to call in as well at 866-303-2270. Now, so we started with the basic history of the CIA. But it seems like what started as this small group of analysts whose job it was to gather intelligence and information for the president has just exploded exponentially over the years. And now it's not only the CIA, but the NSA and different intelligence offices and a blurring of the lines between the CIA and the military. Do I have that right?
Well, you do. It's mostly the CIA that I focus on here, because that's the main story.
Mm-hmm.
The founder of the CIA, Harry Truman, watched it in action for 16 years. And then on the 22nd of December, 1963, wrote the most bizarre op-ed for the Washington Post, in which he pretty much said, look, this is what I had in mind. What is the CIA getting involved in overthrowing governments, as in Iran in 1953, as in Guatemala in 1954, as various attempts to assassinate Castro in the rest of the 50s and early 60s. What's going on here? And, you know, Truman was a very, very blunt guy, and he put pen to paper for this op-ed, and this is kind of interesting. 9 days after John Kennedy was assassinated.
Right.
And we have his notes. They're in the Truman Library. Truman's handwriting. He roughed out this op-ed. And exactly a month after that, he published it in the early edition of the Washington Post. He asked, you know, what's happened to the CIA, and what it should really do is to divest itself of this operational business, and if it's necessary to keep it, put it somewhere else. But for God's sake, let's not let it still be the monster that it's become. Now, guess what happened, Nicole?
I know. And it's stunning. It is stunning what happened. So go ahead.
Well, you know, I keep talking about the fawning corporate media.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I let myself be deceived into thinking this is a new phenomenon. But it dates back at least to 1963 when Truman penned this op-ed. Now, what happened was it appeared in the early edition of the Washington Post. That's the one that goes to bed about 9 o'clock in the evening and appears on my doorstep
early in the morning. Right.
There were two other editions in those days, and all of a sudden it was excised from those editions.
So Harry Truman, former president, wrote this op-ed piece about the CIA. It was published 1 month to the day after JFK's assassination. It was in the first early morning edition of the Washington Post, but then it disappeared. It was not in the later two editions, and this was obviously before the Internet. So once it was gone from that print edition, it was gone.
It was gone, and no other media, no other newspaper picked it up. It went down into a black hole, and... you know, Director William Colby, for whom I served directly, he was quoted as saying much later that, quote, the CIA owns every major media personality in America, period, end quote. I always thought that was hyperbole, right?
Right.
But how else do you explain the disappearance of this
exactly
by the former president?
And that was 1963. Okay, and I hate to do this, but we have to break here. We're at a hard break. Ray McGovern's with us. Stick around, and you'll hear why and what it was that Harry Truman hinted at in that op-ed piece, and that Ray McGovern pretty much said in his piece, "Our president's afraid of the CIA." We'll be right back.
Just laugh it off, it was all okay.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back with Ray McGovern, who's written a fascinating piece today. It's up on commondreams.org, and it is called Counterterrorism is in Shambles, Why? And he attempts to explain it. And what we're doing now is sort of going back through history to figure out how we got where we are. And we discussed, Ray McGovern is with me, how Harry Truman formed the CIA back in 1947 with Congress, but it quickly got out of hand. And right before the break, Ray, you were talking about the piece that on the one-month anniversary of JFK's assassination, the Washington Post early morning edition published an op-ed piece by former President Truman, which quickly disappeared. It was not in any either of the two later editions of the newspaper, and being pre-internet, once it disappeared, it disappeared. And as you rightly point out, you asked the question, was that the long arm of the CIA? Well, and the other thing you pointed out was that Harry Truman said in the piece that and I'm paraphrasing here because I don't have the quote in front of me, but something to the effect that the CIA works when it does what it was supposed to do.
Right, Nicole. Actually, the quote is this. He ended the piece with this quote. I therefore, Harry Truman, would like to see the CIA be restored to its original assignment as the intelligence arm of the president to keep him informed, and that its operational duties be terminated or properly used elsewhere. The other thing he said, which is intriguing, is this. He described as, quote, the most important thing, end quote, was to guard against the chance of intelligence being used to influence or lead the president into unwise decisions. Now, it's clear from the documents that Harry himself penned in his own handwriting that he was thinking of the Bay of Pigs fiasco, where the heads of the CIA, having gotten approval from Eisenhower before JFK ever became president, went ahead with a scheme to land some emigres on the beaches at the Bay of Pigs and then depend on the U.S. Air Force and U.S. Marines to bail them out and overthrow Castro. Now, when JFK got wind of this and it got a briefing from Alan Dulles and the others, he said, look, you know, this doesn't sound real good to me, but just be aware that I'm not going to send any U.S. Air Force or any U.S. Marines into. If you think you guys can do this, well, if Eisenhower approved it, all right, go ahead. But don't depend on any U.S. armed forces. You know, we have the Soviet Union to worry about. The JCS and the guys leading the CIA at the time said, well, you know, this would be a great chance not only to get rid of Castro, but to obliterate the Soviet Union. You know, we have the advantage. We could destroy the Soviet Union as an entity. And Kennedy says, well, how many people would we lose in a nuclear exchange?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer was, oh, probably only maybe 10 million, if we're lucky, 20 million. And Kennedy walks out of the room. He says, I can't believe it. These were people that George Ball, the Deputy Secretary of State at the time, described as a cesspool. Well, actually, what Truman does then is say, you know, these guys can also mislead a president into making what he calls a very unwise decisions. Now, we know from Alan Dulles' coffee-stained notes.
Now, Alan Dulles at the time was the director of the CIA. He was the head guy.
We have Eisenhower to thank for that.
Yeah.
And he, of course, was a specialist in overthrowing governments. He did a real great job in Iran, 53. Excellent
job. In Guatemala.
Right. Yeah. And now he's after Castro, and he's not above deceiving the President of the United States. Dulles' own notes, his coffee-stained notes after he died, say, you know, we knew the President would have to come to our aid. It would be politically impossible for him not to send the Air Force and the Marines, so we went ahead. Mm. Wow. Now, Kennedy knew this, and that's why Kennedy said, I want to split the CIA up into 1,000 pieces and spread it to the far winds. But he wasn't able to do that because the CIA was very, very powerful even then. And the rest of the story is even more unsettling. What happened was that there was great animosity between Dulles and the establishment and John Kennedy. Kennedy was doing all kinds of weird things, like not taking advantage of chances to obliterate Cuba and, by the way, the Soviet Union as well. He was proceeding to arms control, like the limited test ban treaty with the Soviet. He was in private correspondence with Khrushchev.
Wow.
And in the end, he had decided to leave Vietnam. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
There are presidential directives that show that Kennedy had ordered, there were 16,500 troops there, U.S. troops. He had ordered the withdrawal of 1,000 by the end of 1963 and the bulk of the rest of them by the end of 1965.
Wow.
So, you know, he was a comm simp, as we used to say, a communist sympathizer. He was, and these guys had it in for him, okay? So here's Truman writing 9 days after the assassination of Kennedy, warning about the CIA that had become the kind of Frankenstein that he never intended. When I wrote all this, I was drawing heavily on a new book out, and I need to mention that before I forget. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable. The author is James Douglas. His unique contribution is not only to pore over all the evidence that existed before, but the, by act of Congress, scads of other evidence on the JFK assassination have been made public now. Douglas interviewed still more people. And he comes to the conclusion that it was a cabal involving CIA people, involving JCS people, and co-opting people in the Secret Service and the FBI, if you can believe it. Now, I couldn't believe it when I first heard about this. And so, you know, denial being what it is, I have to confess I avoided reading the book for a year. But now I've read it, Nicole.
And you believe that?
Yeah, I think the evidence is very persuasive. Now, as I wrote this book, this article, the first one on the 22nd of December.
That break the CIA in two?
Yeah, you've got to sort of seize on any subterfuge you can to get these things published. And I use the excuse of, whoa, hey, this is the 46th anniversary of Harry Truman's op-ed in the Washington Post.
Right.
You know? And I told people if they missed that, that's okay, because it only appeared in that one limited edition. As a matter of fact, there's a footnote here. I've been talking to folks who instruct new people coming into the CIA. I talked to CIA historians, and guess what? They didn't know about Truman's op-ed either.
Wow.
So it was completely avoided. So anyhow, so I write this thing, and then I get all kinds of reaction. And by the way, I publish first on Consortium News.
Yes, consortiumnews.com.
Yeah.
That's where I'm reading.
Dreams was just replaying that article.
I gotcha.
And
okay.
I mention that because I don't want us to go belly up, and it looks like we might have to. So consortiumnews.com is the
In
one.
Fact, yeah. I'll put the links to all these articles that we're talking about tonight from Consortium News, because that's where I've got them up on my computer right now.
Terrific. So I get this reaction from some researchers who were really into it in the 60s, especially right after JFK was assassinated. And one guy says, well, Ray, you know that Alan Dulles went to visit Harry Truman to try to get him to retract that op-ed. You know that, don't you? And McGovern says, hell no, I didn't know that. Tell me about it. Well, this is the story. Alan Dulles insinuated himself onto the Warren Commission, the commission appointed by Lyndon Johnson to investigate, do a thorough investigation of the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Sure. He was even pretty much the de facto head of the Warren Commission, wasn't he?
He was. He ran the whole thing.
Wow.
He did sort of like a Philip Zelikow, what he did for the 9/11 commission.
Right.
So he was orchestrating this whole thing. Now, here is this, sure, it's only a limited edition op-ed, but it's still out there. And some of the pundits in Washington are saying, my God, Alan Dulles as part of the Warren Commission? Well, that kind of ensures its failure. You know, there are lots of rumors that CIA was involved. So you don't have to be a real conspiratorial folk to say, well, what does Truman do? Well, he arranges to make a speech in Kansas City, right? And then he gets in touch with Truman and says, you know, I'd really like to come out and visit you in the library, you know, for old time's sake and all that stuff. And, of course, he wasn't director under Truman, but he was involved in the CIA. So anyhow, Truman says, of course, yes, and they meet in Truman's library. And this is April the 17th, 1964, so well, that make about 4 or 5 months after Kennedy was assassinated. And all we know, it's in the Truman library records, but there's a memorandum that Alan Dulles wrote 4 days later. To whom? Oh, to the general counsel of the CIA. His old friend, Larry Houston, who joined the CIA in 1947 and was still there. Okay, so here's Dulles writing to Larry Houston, and he says, you know, I talked to Harry Truman, and I told him about all the covert action that he had approved. I reminded him. And then I said, what's this op-ed that ostensibly you wrote? How could you say these things? And Truman said, oh, that's all wrong. That's all wrong. You know, they got it all wrong. So he retracted that, and so everyone should be aware of that. This memorandum of conversation goes into CIA files, right? Okay. Now, Truman the next month comes out with a bitter letter to Look magazine saying the same things that he said in the op-ed. CIA is a danger, and we ought to curtail its activities in the operational mode. So Truman didn't recant. Truman didn't say I was all wrong. Truman never disavowed what he says. As a matter of fact, he and the person that he really first appointed to set up the CIA, Admiral Sowers, had this conversation, all of which is in the Truman Library, in which they're congratulating each other for having finally put this on the public record. So what's Alan Dulles doing? Well, it's an old stratagem. You put a memo in the record, right?
It's a CYA thing.
Yeah, and then if somebody says, you know, what about what Truman said? Truman, you know, he's talking about, do you think the CIA had anything to do with the assassination? And Alan says, oh, I'm glad you asked that question. I'll call the CIA, see what they have on that. I remember.
Something he wrote to cover his butt.
I was out there with Harry Truman, and here's the memcon to prove it. He retracted the whole thing, you know. Wow. You know, this is tradecraft of the Washington kind. And that gives me to believe that that Dulles and this book, which erased the evidence in a very, very persuasive way, that Dulles was in it knee-deep. the grassy knoll, for example, Nicole. Okay, mm-hmm. We know that there were shots from the grassy knoll. Now, we had one source on top of the overpass, not able to see Kennedy, but well able to see the grassy knoll. And he reports two people, one in a suit and one in a railroad kind of overalls, okay? The fellow in the suit takes out a rifle and shoots, okay? And then he folds up this rifle, throws it to the guy in the railroad uniform who walks away.
Mm-hmm.
An alert Dallas cop runs his motorcycle up the grassy knoll, breaks through the barrier, and confronts the guy in the suit, who pulls out a credential identifying him as a Secret Service person.
Wow.
And this happened about five times that day. These people in compromising situations or in the wrong place at the right time, they dig out these Secret Service credentials. Now, Nicole, I asked about that, and guess where the Secret Service was getting its credentials back in the early 60s?
Let me guess. The CIA?
That's right.
Hmm.
And they may still be.
Wow.
So
Ray McGovern is with us. We got to take a break here. The book you're talking about, again, is by James Douglas. It's called JFK and the Unspeakable, and I think I'm going to have to get a copy and have him on the show. All right, we're going to take a break here and come back and then segue into another piece that you have up on consortiumnews.com, and it's called Are Presidents Afraid of the CIA? Pretty logical segue. All right, Ray McGovern's with us. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
And we are back with Ray McGovern, who is a former, worked 27 years for the CIA. He's one of the founding members of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. He now works with Tell the Word, the publishing arm of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. And he writes fairly often about, the things we're talking about at consortiumnews.com, consortiumnews.com. And I'll post on my blog at radioornot.com tonight a few of these articles that we're talking about tonight. Ray, we've talked almost for this full hour and haven't even touched on any of the current issues with the CIA, but it's fascinating. I'm wondering, I know it's kind of late. I don't know if we've only got like 5 minutes in this segment left. Can you hang with me for another segment or two?
Happy to.
Oh, that would be great. Okay, because this is amazing stuff and it's mind-boggling, but it leads us to the question of you know, who's running the government and if there's really a shadow government in the form of the CIA. And that brings us to the next piece, are presidents afraid of the CIA, that you put up on Consortium News on December 29th. So where do we go from here? I mean, is the president making decisions or are decisions being made for him?
Well, for the most part, these abuses that we've talked about, the covert actions, have been blessed by the president, at least sotto voce. Alan Dulles and his ilk would argue that, no, they didn't tell President Kennedy about all these attempts to put poison in a wetsuit that they gave as a present to Fidel Castro, or try to poison him by mafia pills and stuff. No, they didn't, because they didn't think he wanted to know. They were clear that he wanted to get rid of Castro, and they wanted to give him what in the trade is called, quote, plausible denial, end quote. Well, you know, that's a stretch. People need to know, as the sort of juridical background to this, Nicole, that there is one sentence that was inserted in the establishing legislation for the CIA, the National Security Act of 1947, which said, the Director of Central Intelligence shall perform other such functions and duties as the President shall from time to time direct, period, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
That is the sole authorization for these covert actions. And Truman, a little last note on Truman, wrote in the margins of some things he was writing on this, asking the question, have we created our own little Gestapo?
Wow.
Truman's word. not my word.
Okay. Wow, and you do mention in one of these pieces that really the only two presidents to ever challenge the CIA were Harry Truman and John F. Kennedy. And we see what happened to John F. Kennedy.
Yeah. So bringing it down to today, we have the, well, what I've called Panetta and the Seven Dwarfs.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about seven moral dwarfs, namely the previous living CIA directors who had the temerity to write a letter to the president, to
President Barack Obama.
Yeah. And this letter was written on August 24th. It was September 18th, asking the president, pretty much demanding that he, quote, reverse Attorney General Holder's August 24 decision to reopen the criminal investigation of CIA interrogations. Now, just a little background there. Holder, to his great credit, is described reliably as having been sickened after reading the CIA Inspector General's report on the interrogation business, that report having been completed in the spring of 2004 and suppressed until Holder got a hold of it this past spring, okay? So what he did was what any attorney general should do. He needed to broaden the investigation that was already underway with respect to the destruction of 91 CIA interrogation tapes of so-called high-value detainees,
right.
Broaden that investigation, which is being led by federal prosecutor John Durham, broaden that investigation to include things like holding pistols up to detainees' heads, threatening to rape their wives and children, that kind of thing, which wasn't even in the Department of Justice, a very permissive memoranda of what things would be allowed. Now, so that's
you know what? I'm gonna cut you off there, sure. Because we are coming up on the top of the hour, so we have to break. But we will come back. Thank you. Ray McGovern has agreed to stick with us through the break and come back on the other side, and we'll pick it up right there with the Obama Justice Department and the seven, the present and seven past CIA directors telling him to reverse the decision to reopen the criminal investigations on CIA interrogations. We'll be right back.
The word is about, there's something evolving. Whatever may come, the world keeps revolving. They say the next big thing is here, that the revolution's near. But to me it seems quite clear that it's all just a little bit of history repeating.
And now you see why I use that song as my theme music, because history does keep repeating. We don't learn from our mistakes. It is Nicole Sandler back with you for round two of our Wednesday night get-together here on Air America Radio. And I'm thrilled and honored that Ray McGovern has decided to hang with us, stay over the break, because the first hour was so fascinating, and there's so much more to talk about. Ray McGovern had a 27-year career at the CIA, serving under nine different CIA directors in all four of the CIA's main areas, including operations. He's the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, and now works with Tell the Word, the publishing arm of the Ecumenical Church of the Savior in inner city Washington. And he writes fairly often at consortiumnews.com, including a piece published today entitled Counterterrorism in Shambles, Why? And a couple of pieces that he wrote in the last few weeks. One is Break the CIA in Two, that was published on the 22nd of December, followed a week later by Are Presidents Afraid of the CIA? And they all sort of work together, and we're discussing really all three of them tonight. And when we had to break just a few moments ago, we had taken, we moved on from the history of the CIA to where we are today. And Ray was telling us about how just a few months back in September, Leon Panetta, the current director of the CIA, and seven of, as Ray refers to them, his moral dwarf predecessors, got together and wrote a, sent a letter to the president, to President Obama, asking him to reverse Attorney General Holder's decision to reopen the criminal investigation of CIA interrogations. Now, there was already an investigation going as to how these 91 tapes of the, quote, enhanced torture techniques that were being performed on their high-level detainees were destroyed. So, Ray, why don't you, you pick it up there? That's sort of where we left off.
Sure, yeah. Well, Holder, as I say, having read the CIA Inspector General report, was sickened and decided that he needed to do this if he was going to be the nation's chief law enforcement officer. And to his credit, Obama said, okay. So here come the seven dwarfs, the seven previous CIA directors. Panetta didn't sign on to this for obvious reasons, he being, you know, in office now. But what they're saying here is, look, you can't go ahead with this. You must stop this investigation. Now, quite apart from the merits of the thing, here they're interfering with a presidential decision, actually the Attorney General's decision, to launch a criminal investigation. I mean,
yeah.
That is so inappropriate, so you know, beyond the pale. And what are they afraid of? Well, three of the seven. You know, the word really, I guess, is disingenuous or transparent. Three of the seven, George Tenet, Porter Goss, and Michael Hayden,
mm-hmm.
were themselves involved in one way or another in planning or conducting or covering up all kinds of illegal actions, including torture, including assassination, including illegal eavesdropping. So,
right, all of that under the George W. Bush administration, by
right.
the way. Yes.
Yeah, but the rest of the story is this, Nicole, and this is what really turns my stomach. The guys running the torture, the kidnapping, the putting detainees, detainees in black holes without telling their children or their wives or much less the Red Cross, these people are still running the CIA. They're still running the Central Intelligence Agency well into Obama's second year now.
Huh? Mm-hmm.
Now, when Obama was asked on the Sunday TV shows right after this letter came out, you know, they actually published it, these seven previous
wow.
directors, and I served under all of them. You know, and at very close remove to a couple who didn't sign on, like Admiral Turner under Jimmy Carter, and Bill Colby, who died mysteriously, but that's another subject for perhaps for another program.
Okay.
But what Obama felt he had to say on these TV shows when people said, what about that letter from the seven previous CIA directors? He said, well, you know, I respect the CIA for all it does. I respect them. That was always the first sentence out of his
mm-hmm.
mind. Wow. Well, yeah, great. He respects them. Why did he leave the people orchestrating, approving, and monitoring the torture regime? Why did he leave them in office? Why did he take this fellow John Brennan, whom actually I know pretty well, why did he take him and put him in a very influential position in the White House, actually Deputy National Security Assistant? Now, Brennan was the fellow that Obama's folks picked to be the advance team for the intelligence community after Obama was elected. And the idea was that Brennan was going to take over the CIA. But those of us who knew Brennan and knew about his role, his public espousal of the extraordinary renditions and so forth, you know, raised such a hue and cry that he was out of the run. He withdrew himself
wow.
from the running.
See, now, he was all over the Sunday talk shows last week, and he was so commanding. He just seemed to have a great, you know, he was talking about the underwear bomber, the
right.
attempted
yeah.
You know, plane bomber, but he just seemed so in control and so very commanding and very, very credible,
very well rehearsed. Well, you probably noticed the use of the first person singular. I talked to the ambassador last
mm-hmm.
night, I talked to the king, and I talked to the prime minister, and now we're getting mm-hmm. everything on the yellow. Well, that's, you know, that's a study. We rehearsed that at the CIA. That's, you know, you to appear authoritative, you just have to be somewhat literate, and you rehearse, okay?
Yeah.
Now, he's the guy, get this, He's the fellow that helped set up the National Counterterrorist Center. He's a big counterterrorist guy, and as far as I can tell, he shares a great deal of the responsibility for the incredible screw-ups. And I'm talking about this fellow, Abdul Muttalib.
Yes, the underwear bomber.
Yeah, there's a cottage industry here in Washington now. If you can memorize his name and say it right.
You can get on all the talk shows.
Yeah, it's like the prime minister, the president of Iran, you know, Ahmadinejad. You can say that quick. Wow, you know, that's like John Bernier for your third. Okay, Abdul Muttalib. What about him? Well, you can't believe the screw-ups there. It's exactly like 9/11. Nobody put the so-called dots together. I mean, these were not dots. They were whole paragraphs, for God's sake.
Right.
And this guy's right there. So now it's going to be really interesting, Nicole, really, really interesting. President coming on yesterday, and he says, I will not tolerate this. Well,
right. Now, what about, there was an allegation sort of made the other night by Richard Wolff on MSNBC that this might have been a thing where it might have been sort of a turf war in the intelligence community, or somebody protecting their own information that they didn't want to share with someone else. Are there too many cooks in the kitchen? I mean, where was the breakdown there? Or are they just, is our intelligence community so screwed up that, and maybe too many people? What do you think is the problem?
Both and, Nicole. Mm-hmm. It's both of those things. There are fiefdoms in the intelligence community. And Harry Truman, again, to his great credit, was hell-bent and determined to make sure that the intelligence community worked together as one. And that's why he gave the Director of Central Intelligence two roles, not only to run the CIA, but to run the intelligence components of the Defense Department, the State Department, the National Security Agency, the FBI, and so forth and so on. Now, that's a tough job. That's a really tough job to wear those two hats. But I watched nine directors contend with that, and many of them did a very creditable job. First and foremost, Admiral Turner, who was under Jimmy Carter. And I think if you have an extra minute here, I think a little personal vignette from Admiral Turner would be worth telling, because it's very instructive. I was on Lera with him one time, and we had a little time in the so-called blue room or green room or whatever to chat about these things. And I said to him, I said, Admiral Turner, how was it that you got the intelligence community working as one? How was it that the FBI didn't hide stuff from us or NSA? And he said, Ray, this is what happened. I was commander of the 6th Fleet out there in the Mediterranean, and I got a little tip. President-elect Carter is going to call you in about 2 minutes and ask you to be head of the CIA, Director of Central Intelligence, head of the whole intelligence community. Now, Ray, when that happens, says Stan Turner, you only have about 2 minutes to figure out how to make it better, you know. How to put a condition on this thing, if you can, when you're asked by the president-elect. So when he called, I said, Mr. President, I am honored that you asked me to do that, but I have one request. And Jimmy Carter says, what's that? He said, I'm a military man, and I've learned not to accept responsibility without the authority. And my impression of the intelligence community is that it's a very disparate bunch of people, some of whom hide information from others. So if you can make that right, I'd be delighted to serve as your Director of Central Intelligence. 1 week later, a executive memorandum over Jimmy Carter's signature to the Defense Secretary, State Department, Secretary of State, and so forth. Stan Turner is my Director of Central Intelligence. You will share all information with him, and I have instructed him that if he senses that some is being withheld, he's report directly to me to point that out. It worked. That's exactly what Stan Turner. Sure, they held the FBI withheld stuff. And as soon as Stan Turner learned about it, he went down to the NSC and to the president and said, look, you know, I can't do my job as your principal intelligence advisor unless you call the attorney general, have him get those guys in the FBI to share the stuff that I need to work with. And Jimmy Carter would call up, or somebody would call up, and it would be fixed. Now, that's the kind of thing you need, that kind of courage. that kind of not needing the job, that mm-hmm. kind of not trying to be on the team, you know, but yep. rather trying to serve the president as Truman initially envisaged. So that's the kind of thing that needs to happen, and it has not happened. And the sorry state of events having to do with 9/11, as I mentioned before, there were all kinds of pieces of information, far more than were available before Pearl Harbor, okay? Mm-hmm. And nobody put it together because George Tenet, whose responsibility it was to do that, was off hobnobbing with potentates and crooks in the Middle East, thugs that would overthrow stuff in the Middle East. Now, he didn't do his job as the director of Central Intelligence. He got involved in the operation stuff, which we talked about before.
Right. And then now we have a situation just last week. And if you can hold on just a couple more minutes, because I got to take a break. But I do want to ask you about the deaths of 7 CIA agents in Afghanistan just last week by a double, or now we're hearing a triple agent, and how something like that can happen. Ray McGovern is with us. I'm going to infringe on him for just a couple more minutes, so stand by. We'll be right back.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler. Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
All right, we are back. It is a fascinating evening. We're talking with Ray McGovern, who worked for the CIA for 27 years and gave us a whole bunch of background and is answering lots of questions for us. And Ray, so to the last big, I think, epic fail, to use modern vernacular, from the CIA, where this guy from Jordan, who now we're finding out was a doctor, a 32-year-old Jordanian doctor who was believed to be a double agent, and now they're saying, well, he was a triple agent, somehow they got 13 CIA agents together on a U.S. base in Afghanistan, which from what I hear is unthinkable. They don't do that. And he blew himself up and took out 7 of the CIA agents with him. How does something like that happen?
Well, Nicole, it's a sad story, actually.
Horrible.
I'm thinking when I say sad, I mean, one of those, the base chief actually was a mother of 3 small children.
Oh, and, terrible.
Not to mention the Afghan children and the Pakistani children, mm-hmm. the others who are perishing. So what we have here is a distinct lack of tradecraft, a bunch of amateurs who are trying to get ahead. They apparently were told that this fellow, this source, would have information that would lead to the capture of Osama bin Laden or Zawahiri, his deputy. And, man, that means, you know, promoted into super grade status, okay?
Right.
So they forgot all tradecraft, allowed this guy to set up the locale and time of the meeting. I mean, nobody, does, even substantive analysts, know enough tradecraft to not allow a source like that to set up the conditions for a meeting and to control it and then to appear on agency soil, so to speak. Give me a break. This was a terrible mistake, and people have paid a terrible price for it. So the question is, you know, who will be held accountable? Who approved this? What kind of manager would let a base chief go ahead and do this out of excessive zeal to get ahead or whatever it was? And when Obama says, in a broader sense, you know, for Abdul-Dinabab and also this thing, that, you know, he's going to not tolerate this. He's going to hold people accountable. Well, that's going to be really interesting, you know, and I think that's going to speak volumes. Let's see what he does. You know, who's accountable for all this?
Right. Well, tomorrow, this new the whole report is going to be released. What do you expect to come from that?
The report from Abdul-Dinabab or whatever.
Well, this is going to be the report on the underwear bomber.
Mutalab, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't expect a lot to come out of that. I think it's been styled as a preliminary report, and I don't think it's going to tell us a lot more than we already know. And God, don't we know enough about all the screw ups there and all there has been some suggestion that there's some nefarious scheming going on, namely a deliberate withholding of this information.
Right.
I don't see enough evidence to be persuaded of that yet.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is that, you know, here's...
You know, we are coming up against the bottom of the hour again. I'm so sorry.
No problem. Mm-hmm.
Would you like to stay? I mean, I don't want to cut you off, but I know it's very late.
Well, I don't want to weary people down, but I'm wide awake.
Okay,
it's your call.
Oh, I'd love to have you stay. Ray McGovern is with us. Thank you so much. We will be right back and pick up right where we left off. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler. You're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Nicole Sandler.
Give us a call at 866-303-2270.
We are back and thrilled that Ray McGovern is still with us, a 27-year member of the CIA who has served under 9 different CIA directors in all 4 of the main areas, including operations, and the co-founder of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity. Never one to mince words or to hold back, and we've gotten a great... history lesson, really, about the CIA tonight. Ray writes fairly often at consortiumnews.com, and a few recent pieces he wrote, including one published there today, Counterterrorism is in Shambles, Why? And he explains, it sounds like, we would have been much better off had JFK indeed broken the CIA into 1,000 pieces, or Ray, as you suggest, breaking it in 2 and putting the CIA back to what it started out as, which is an agency to gather information for the president.
And that is its key function still, Nicole, and the screw-ups lately have had largely to do, especially with this fellow Abdul Muttalib, had to do with no one being in charge of the whole intelligence community. How is it that the stations abroad and the State Department and the Transportation Safety Administration, how is it that nobody has them in harness? And what has to happen is there has to be accountability. No one was held accountable for the screw-ups before 9/11, and thereon hangs a tale, because unless people have a personal interest in making sure that they don't screw up, unless they're afraid of losing their job or being shamed before the rest of the world, they're going to be pretty lackadaisical about things, and that's what happened with Abdul Muttalib.
Should somebody have been fired over that?
Well, somebody should be fired over that, and we'll see if President Obama has the guts to do that.
Mm.
You know, I talked about the broad role of the Director of Central Intelligence. When Colleen Rowley, who, by the way, co-authored that latest piece.
The counterterrorism piece.
Yeah,
yes.
She's the one that from the FBI exposed the weaknesses of the FBI's handling of evidence pre 9/11. They had captured Mousawi, who was one of the thought to be, well, certainly was in on 9/11. He was supposed to be one of the hijackers. Now, they established, the FBI did, by going around the back door and going out to Paris, they established that Mousawi was a terrorist, that he was connected with the Chechnya terrorists, and he was the fellow in Minnesota who was really interested in learning how to fly a 747, but not much interested in how to take off or to land.
Right.
I mean, hello,
yes.
You know, okay?
Yes.
So what Colleen and her compatriots there at the Minnesota field office of the FBI, they're banging on FBI headquarters. Please, please, let us look into this fellow's laptop. Let us apprehend him. And they couldn't get to first base. And CIA knew about this, and George Tenet knew about it a month before 9/11. Now, if George Tenet was doing his job, he would have called in the director of the FBI and said, what about this? You know, what's the problem here? We need to get to the bottom of this. But Tenet was not interested in that. He was completely ineffectual in this role. So that's what I'm saying. Somebody needs to be in control. Now, Tenet, by virtue of his office as Director of Central Intelligence, was that fellow. Now, when the 9/11 Commission gave out its report, I was asked to be on the BBC just to kind of comment on it. And I remember it was a no-brainer. I said, well, nobody's been held accountable here. Not one soul is going to suffer any consequences here. This is really bad. In walks two 9/11 commissioners, okay, Jamie Gorelick and Slade Gorton, a previous senator from the state of Washington. Okay, so Jamie goes right into the BBC booth or the studio right when I come out, and so I have a one-on-one with Gorton, and I say, Senator Gorton, you know, you all on the commission keep saying no one's in charge of the intelligence community. Surely you're aware that by act of Congress, there is such a person, and right now that happens to be Director of Central Intelligence, George Tenet. You know what he does? He tiptoes up to me, puts his arm around me, and says, in a whisper, yes, Ray, we all know that. But George wouldn't do it. He wouldn't take charge. He wouldn't do what he was supposed to do.
Wow.
And so I'm saying, Mike, I'm just about to say, oh, my God. So you have to create a whole new superstructure, add 2,000 supernumeraries to the bureaucracy to fix this problem? But he was called into the BBC studio just then, and Jamie Gorelick came out, but she didn't, you know, she didn't have any time for me. So what you had here was a superstructure imposed on the intelligence community when none was needed. We have a new Director of National Intelligence. We have a National Counterterrorist Center. And worst of all, we have 170,000 people in this new Department of Homeland Security, which now includes the Secret Service, the Transportation Safety Administration, FEMA. You know, it's just, it was bureaucratic, quote, fix, end quote, before the election in 2004. It made no sense, and it makes no sense now. So let's say the president really wants to go after who's in charge. Well, he's got John Brennan now, who's supposed to be coordinating things in the thing. Or is it the Director of National Intelligence, Admiral Blair? Or, oh, maybe it's Leon Panetta. No, Janet Napolitano, maybe.
Oh,
you know?
And therein lies the problem.
You
it's the too many cooks.
You can see what's going to happen here. Yeah.
Wow. And so who to hold accountable? Well, probably none of them. Right.
Yeah. Well, they may find somebody in the State Department
to be a
scapegoat. Pass along the information on Abdul Muttalib and you know, just like the Lindy Englands of Abu Ghraib, they'll crucify that sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
But Obama has a chance to do something now, and it will speak volumes with respect to how strong he feels vis-a-vis the CIA, depending on what he ends up doing.
But my thought is, and it goes back to, you know, what you wrote and what, you know, what is now, you know, being alleged about JFK. Could Obama just be scared? I mean, is he, you know, afraid for his life or his family's life?
Well, I think he is. I mean, I think both in a physical and a political way. Now, this is a real establishment here in Washington. If he goes against the CIA, you've got the Washington Post, the neocons there, the New York Times. You've got lots of people, big, heavy establishment, influential people that will be all over him. And the personal safety thing? Well, look at the Secret Service. And we know that yet another fellow went to that state dinner now,
that's
right?
That's right. There's a third. Yep.
Yeah, and we know that the Secret Service has been screwing up for years now with many incidents like this. Now, a president's got to be disquieted about that, and he may be very firm and say, I will not tolerate this, but unless he sends a couple of heads rolling, nobody's going to take him seriously.
You got that right. All right, I've been hogging you. Tim is calling from Los Angeles, so I want to get him on. Tim from L.A., you're on with Ray McGovern.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, Ray. Well, Nicole, first of all, thank you very much for having me on.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Ray, thank you. Ray, I have two questions for you
about
9/11. Thank you. And the first question is, do you think that 19 hijackers, though I'm hearing 6 to 8 of them are alive today, and a multi-billionaire can take that, who was hiding in Tora Bora, I guess, can take down and destroy the infrastructure of the United States? And my second question is, everyone saw the thing of how the buildings landed upon itself, building 1 and 2, but there was a third building 7, that went down on its own footprints. And my question is regarding Building 7, I'm hearing things that there was some stuff that were, I guess, housed in Building 7. Can you explain what Building 7 is and what was inside there?
Well, those are two good questions, and that's why we need an investigation of 9/11. Mm-hmm. The 9/11 Commission report was a cover-up, pure and simple.
Right.
The question is what it's covering up, whether it's gross misfeasance or whether it's worse, malfeasance. We need to find that out by a very studied commission, a new one that will be independent in a real sense. And part of the help here is going to be Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who now is going to be arraigned and tried in New York City. It'll be very interesting how he explains his role as the, quote, mastermind, end quote, of 9/11, whether he comes out persuasively or not. So for me, the jury is out. We need to do a real investigation, and we should learn from that.
You know, there was a group in New York City Can, that tried to get a new independent investigation that would be paid for by private donations, no public funding, and the New York courts ruled against it.
Yeah, it was actually the city council.
Right.
Yeah, so, that was really unfortunate. I was in touch with those folks and spoke with them, spoke for them a number of times. But I don't lose hope. I think this thing is one of those things that's going to take years still, but we'll find out. And when we find out, I hope that people will hold people accountable.
Well, what about, then? Thanks for calling, Tim. Did you have any more, any other question?
All right. I guess my last question would be 9/11 inside job, just to put everything, you know, aside, put it to rest.
What, you're asking if Ray thinks it was an inside job?
I'm an intelligence analyst. We don't do faith-based intelligence. People ask me, for example, well, you know, you've seen Dick Cheney in action. Don't you think he's capable of doing 9/11? And I say, yeah, I believe that he's capable, but, you know, I don't do faith-based intelligence. I have to rely on the evidence. And the evidence so far is so elusive. And begs so many questions, and each theory that comes up raises six more questions, that I have to say that we have to have a full investigation. And until that time, until I'm persuaded, I'm not willing to subscribe to this or that theory.
Okay.
Gotcha. All right, Tim, thanks for the call. You know, I guess there's so many other questions, Ray, and we could go for another 2 hours, and I still wouldn't have all my questions answered. But in terms of, you know, the war crimes, I think, of the former administration, the Bush administration, and the Obama administration's reluctance to hold them accountable, maybe you don't know, I shouldn't assume, that the intelligence that got us into Iraq in the first place was flawed. Do you think that, I mean, can we look back? Is there any way that we can hold that administration accountable for lying us into that war?
Well, there should be. Obama has not shown the courage to do that now. You know, I was willing to give him a little slack. I thought, health reform should be top on his agenda. Mm-hmm. I'm a beneficiary of single payer. I have Medicare now, and had I not, I'd be dead.
Yep.
I had cancer 2 years ago and a heart thing this past year, and it was all paid for, okay?
Wow.
So I said, well, let him do this first, and then he'll come back to this. But now I have real doubts. Now I think, I look at it I used to say, glass half full. Now the only thing that gives much hope is this investigation, the broadened one by John Durham, the federal prosecutor, and he hasn't been heard from for 2 years, even though he was given the charter 2 years ago to look into the destruction of the CIA tape. So, I'm fast losing hope that anything's going to happen anytime soon. But I think in the end, as it usually does, the truth will come out, and people will be identified as being responsible.
Well, we can only hope. Ray McGovern, thank you so much for spending all this time with us tonight and answering so many questions. It has just been eye-opening and fascinating. And again, I will post links to the three articles we talked about from consortiumnews.com on my blog at radioornot.com. And I look forward to speaking with you again. This has just been wonderful. I thank you so much.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it.
Okay, we'll talk again soon. Thanks. All right, we'll take a break and come back and wrap things up for this Wednesday night. Don't go away.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Nicole Sandler.
You're listening to Nicole Sandler on Air America Radio.
Wow, my head is still spinning. How awesome was Ray McGovern? Oh, man. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I've been reading his stuff ever since seeing him on TV 3.5 years ago when he challenged Donald Rumsfeld at that, it was a speech that Rumsfeld was giving in Atlanta, and he stood up and I just, my jaw dropped. The video is still up there, and I saw it, I'm sure it was on Countdown. Keith Olbermann not only played the video, but he interrupted it throughout the video to do fact checks and to back up everything Ray McGovern said when he was confronting Rumsfeld about lying about the intelligence. And if I said to Ray before the break that about the intelligence being a flawed that got us into Iraq, that was not the word that I meant. I meant the intelligence was fake. It was phony. It was manufactured to bring us into this war. Well, that war in Iraq. Instead of capturing, you know, and in these three articles, again, as soon as we get off the air tonight, I didn't write a blog today, but I will put up a short blog on radioornot.com and link these three articles that Ray wrote for consortiumnews.com because they are required reading, especially with everything that's going on right now. We need to be informed. And the really scary thing is I'm sitting in the chat room and somebody earlier during this, well, Ray was just telling us everything that went on, said, what can we do about this? Nothing. There is not a damn thing that we can do about it. And that's the really scary thing. I mean, look, even Ray said, I asked him, is Barack Obama afraid for his life and for his family's life? And he probably is. He pointed out that the only two presidents who ever really challenged the CIA were Harry Truman, who's the guy who got it started in the first place, and after sitting back and watching what happened to them in a very short 16 years, he knew that it was a monster that was unleashed. And then the other one being JFK. And look what happened to JFK. The book that Ray McGovern mentioned is called JFK and the Unspeakable by James Douglas. And I will certainly try to track that down and get James Douglas on the show. Look, Vincent Bugliosi wrote this huge volume, supposedly the definitive volume on the JFK assassination. And he said Oswald acted alone. You know, that was it. But I don't know about that. Now, I know Tom Hartman also had a book on the JFK assassination, and I honestly don't know much about it, and I don't know what his thoughts are on that. But this is certainly, I don't know. I trust Ray McGovern. I really, really do. All right. We are just about out of time. What a show. What a night, huh? I did do an interview with Carl Frisch of Media Matters that is quite fun. We'll get to it one of these days because it's sort of evergreen. If I don't get to it, I will certainly podcast it at radioornot.com, okay? Tomorrow night being Thursday, I think we have our regular Thursday night guests, Christy Harvey of the Center for American Progress and John Fugelsang. And Friday night, I'm going to have somebody on from a magazine called International Living that released today, they had an index of the best places in the world to live. Because I know, like me, a lot of people out there are thinking, where can we go? Because America is unfortunately quickly becoming a place that is nothing like what the United States of America used to be. And so, well, it's a really fascinating concept. So we'll deal with that Friday night. Yeah, as we continue our first week back in this new year. Wow, what a night. All right, thank you for listening. Have a great night. I'll talk to you back here again tomorrow on Air America Radio. And again, always check me out at radioornot.com. I'm Nicole Sandler. Thanks for hanging out tonight. And thank you to Ray McGovern for a fascinating show. Good night.